that will last less than an hour. But it's really a nice event. And all are welcome, gay, straight, or wavy, as someone once said. And I think I announced last week that that in the religion section of the parade last year, they counted over 200 people. So it's they pointed out that 38 years ago when the parade started, religious groups used to protest against the parade, and now they join the parade. So what a difference a few decades make. So only a Buddha with a Buddha is a line in the Lotus Sutra that goes on to say that only a Buddha with a Buddha understands the Buddha Dharma, or understands the characteristics of all things. And, you know, we study the Buddha Dharma. And the Buddha Dharma talks about the truth, the two truths of diversity and unity, the relative and the absolute, that in our practice we understand the total immersion and inclusion and non-separation between unity and diversity. We say that dharmas, things, aren't one and they aren't two. So this fascicle attempts to talk about Buddhas and the characteristics of Buddhas that are realizing the Buddha Dharma, the characteristic of all things. It says in here that a Buddha has unsurpassed wisdom. When you have unsurpassed wisdom, you are called a Buddha. When a Buddha has unsurpassed wisdom, it is called unsurpassed wisdom. What is it like being undivided? So this unsurpassed wisdom is about non-separation, undivided mind. Being undivided is like not wishing for more color or more brightness when viewing flowers or the moon. Being undivided is like meeting a person and not considering what the person looks like. So I think those are hard things to achieve, but I can kind of understand that. I can understand how I might practice with not wishing for more or less, but celebrating what is. A teacher of old said, although the entire universe is nothing but the Dharma body of the self, you should not be hindered by the Dharma body. So to be hindered means that there's something out there that's in your way. So this line again talks about wholeness, that the body is the whole earth. There is nothing in the self that's going to get in the way. There's nothing that you can identify about this or that that will get in the way, because that is you. That entire earth is you. What then is the way for people to be free from hindrance? If you cannot clearly say how to free all people, you will lose even the life of the Dharma body and sink into the ocean of suffering for a long time. So if someone asks you, how do you free all people? It says, say the entire universe is the Dharma body of the self. So you just really have to investigate this entire body is the entire earth is the Dharma body of the self. So that when you're freeing all beings, or when you see suffering, you can just say the entire earth is the true Dharma body of the self, and you'll relieve that suffering. So this Buddha, this fascicle is about describing Buddhas, identifying Buddhas, is about wholeness and non-division, non-separation. Just say it. Spring has the feeling of spring, and autumn has the look of autumn. There is no escaping it. When you want spring or autumn to be different from what it is, notice that it can be only what it is. We can try to be other than ourselves, but we are ourselves. That's in another translation. All beings wish to know the self. Buddhas know the true self. What Buddhas call the self is the entire earth. That really is the refrain that's not only said over and over by me, but over and over in this first part of this fascicle. Buddhas are about wholeness, non-separation, non-division, not picking and choosing, not identifying characteristics, but integration and wholeness. So we're studying this. We're studying the Buddha Dharma. When one is asked if they want to be a priest in this tradition, it's with the idea that this inquiry is going to be your highest priority. Inquiry into the self, inquiry into wholeness, inquiry into non-division. We just had a Jukai ceremony, the lay ordination here, which is sometimes called the staying home ordination, staying home and seeking the way. The priest ordination is the leaving home and clarifying the way, seeking the way. monks used to say goodbye to their families and their Dharma brothers and sisters who were their new family. They'd set aside their clothes, you know, whatever culture they came from, whatever tribe they came from, whatever neighborhood, whatever hood they came from, and they would put on clothes. All the monks would put on the same clothes. So you were leaving home. In America, we're asked to make commitments. We're asked to reorganize our priorities. But a lot of us don't go too far from home. But definitely we make commitments to ourselves to keep this inquiry as our highest priority. We make commitments to the Sangha and the community that we practice in to support practice. We make commitments to our teacher to continue studying the Dharma. And I think Kokyo did a more traditional leaving home and entered the monastery. One of our ancestors, Dongshan, famously, when he went into the monastery, wouldn't even accept a visit from his mother, thinking that would pull him away from this inquiry. It was said that Dongshan was his mother's favorite child. The older son had died, and heaven forbid the younger brother was poor. So Dongshan was the favorite, and she ended up homeless and begging, and said the story says that she died crying at the monastery door, and he still wouldn't see her. And let it be known that Kokyo visited his mother just last week. So there's a new dawn, a new era in this home leaving, where we can now visit our mothers. Prior to becoming a priest, you know, I'd been here a long time, and I'd certainly done a thorough investigation of myself and this practice. And so I was able to make those commitments to keep this inquiry as my highest priority. I was doing it with a sangha full of Buddhas that were all doing the same practice. I just want to tie in that concept of only a Buddha and a Buddha, or with a Buddha. I was doing this with my community that was supporting my practice, that was nurturing my practice, and I was willing to give back to the community. So it was a community of Buddhas that I was entering the priesthood among, with. This idea of, you know, there's that initial concept of renunciation is a lot about home leaving, renouncing the comforts of home life, renouncing the bosom of your mother, perhaps, so that you were stripped bare to have a thorough investigation of Buddha Dharma, but I think another way to look at that is this is a renunciation of divided mind, a renunciation of of delusion, at least a vow to study delusion and divided mind, and taking the priest vows was about moving towards wholeness and moving towards this renunciation of divided mind. So that's I was able to make those kinds of vows, and I think that's those concepts are reflected here in Dogen's fascicle. But on another level, the idea of home leaving was something that that I'd done before. I'd done that practice before, and I think every gay person who comes out realizes that profound leaving and of one thing and into another, and I think we wouldn't call it a divided mind. I think the home leaving that we do when we come out is stepping into wholeness, not only for ourselves with whatever divided mind we have about our sexuality, but about our community and our society. When we can make that step of coming out. So it was about age 22, so you know, 20 some, almost 30 years before my priest taking up my home leaving as a monk, that I set out on this journey where I sat my parents down and talked to them, and then later my two brothers. This sounds a little dry here. I was stepping out of the norm of the ideas of heterosexual marriage and children, and how that fits into my parents' hopes for the extended family with grandchildren. Number two, stepping out from the stabilizing effect that family and society can have on a traditional family unit. And number three was the risks of estrangement from family and friends, and the risks of discrimination and danger. So that was sort of the relative look at what coming out does. But it looked a lot, when I look back, like my preparation for the priesthood. Certainly prior to coming out, I'd done about 10 years of thorough investigation of the self, noticing who I was attracted to. And are you censoring this part, Lisa?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I just read John Irving has a new book called In One Person, that the characters are gay and bisexual and transsexual, and their lives, and very, very, very good book. And he talks about the young kid who is noticing his inappropriate attractions, his attraction to the wrong people, his crushes on the wrong people. And he asks his teachers about, you know, what do you do when you have a crush on the wrong person? So I thought that was a good way of looking at that, the beginning of that exploration of the self. and certainly by age 22, you know, in college. You know, I was just so lucky. I grew up around here. I mean, I grew up on the Central Coast, and I went to college here, you know, in the shadow of San Francisco. So, I was exposed to gay culture from an early age. My father worked in San Francisco and had gay co-workers. My family is politically liberal. My brothers are appropriately clueless, or at least they were as teenagers at the time. So it wasn't a bad environment to thoroughly explore my nature in. So by 22, I'd been out. I'd been dating. I had friends in the gay community. It was another period that I knew I was joining other Buddhas that were also exploring their wholeness, their non-division, there we all were together. There we all were at, in those days, Mona's Gorilla Lounge, the Dragon Moon on SoCal. These would make great mirror balls, which were in all the establishments, and there we all were. Putting wholeness as our first priority. So, 30 years later, it was like deja vu. You know, this has a ring to it. This has a familiar ring to it. And of course, Santa Cruz Zen Center has always been a very welcoming place. I was on the board of directors in the first few years that I was here, after I'd been here a couple of years, and I was on the board of the directors, then for many years. At one point, who's counting, but the majority of the board members were LGBT, and of course, this is Santa Cruz, but I think this welcoming nature is something that we were lucky enough to inherit from San Francisco, from our lineage, and Suzuki Roshi, who, you know, we heard was only a little bit nervous about making Tassajara coeducational. You know, there was some talk at the very beginning that Tassajara would just be a monastery for men, but that was dashed right from the beginning, because, you know, even in those first few years of San Francisco Zen Center, women and men were so vitally interconnected in the practice at San Francisco Zen Center. I think there was even a minute in the very first days of San Francisco Zen Center where men and women sat on different sides of the Zendo. But after a short time, you know, it all became very integrated, and so I think we the causes the we have inherited very been lucky enough to inherit these very skillful and compassionate causes and conditions that maybe other lineages weren't so lucky to inherit. And we chant once a week about this whole concept of diversity and unity, merging of differences in unity, and that seems to be such a cornerstone of our practice, even back into many centuries ago, that that poem came out of the eighth Chinese ancestor, Sekito Kisen. So I'll finish up with a koan that I found. Buddhist literature fills many libraries, so you can always find literature to back up your argument. unlike some other religions, we've always got literature that can be used in any way we want. But this is there's so many koans, and this is one I found the koan, the number 55 in the White Cliffs of Dover, called Master Onryu Pays a Visit. Master Onryu and a young monk went to pay a visit. When they got to the other monk's hut, they were hanging up their clothes in the closet, and the young monk rapped on the closet door and said, "Gay or straight? Gay or straight? Which is it?" And Master Onryu said, "I won't say. I won't say." And the young monk rapped again on the closet door, "Gay or straight? Gay or straight?" And once again the reply was, "I won't say. I won't say." And the young monk got a little more agitated and threatened to hit the master. And he said, "Go ahead. I won't say." The commentary says that he was compassionately not saying. So the koan continues with years later, after Onryu's death, the monk continues to work on this koan, and he talks to Onryu's Dharma brother Fugon and says, "Help me figure this out. Gay or straight? Gay or straight?" And Fugon compassionately says, "I won't say. I won't say." And immediately the young monk had a deep realization of reality. A commentary on this says, "Grappling with the forest of brambles, Zen practitioners the world over probe the question of gay or straight. Before it is realized, it is like a 10-mile-high wall or a bottomless gorge. After it is seen, it is realized that, from the beginning, the obstructions have been nothing but the self. Lost in the double barrier of gay or straight, the monk has to know. Because of intimacy, because of compassion, the old master won't say. From the time of the Buddha down to the present, this is how it has been. However, if you think this old koan is about being gay or straight, then you too have missed the master's teaching." So, for me, that intimacy of the master, the compassion, was the manifestation of that non-hindrance, that the entire Dharma, the Dharma body, the body of the true self, is the entire earth. There's no characteristic that's going to get in the way. Nothing outside of whatever body you have that is going to be a hindrance, a detriment, that that resting in the true body of the entire self is our salvation, is our liberation. So maybe other scholars here have read other commentaries on this koan that they'd like to share. Or if you've got any thoughts or questions about this practice of realizing the entire universe is our true body, this is a time to share your thoughts. Monk Chris. Well, I thought I'd leave you hanging, and I shouldn't have made him the bad guy. Supposedly, after her death, he went and took the grains of rice that she had gathered with the other beggars, and mixed them in with the rice supply of the monks. As a gesture of no separation, as a gesture of unity of his life with his mother. And he had a dream after he did this where his mother spoke to him and said, "Thank you very much for showing me the delusion of attachment, and I have now been born in a particularly advantageous heaven because of your practice." So what a story. What a great story.
I think it might have been more difficult for Dongshan to fully meet his mother.
All these stories are so cryptic, and they leave a lot to our imagination. And a lot is left out, I think, purposely, so that we can. It's a koan for us. How can we? Where did I underline it here? I'm sorry. How can we meet our mother and not consider what she looks like? Maybe that was his practice. Maybe he didn't know how to, as you said, meet his mother with that kind of wholeness, and that's another way to think about it. Monk.
Encourage and cultivate in practice is choosing the alive.
saying yes to, or what brings up the impulse to towards health. So in the gay, straight, lesbian, bi, trans, lady, intersex, questioning, straight ally, question, what I would be wanting to cultivate is where is the impulse toward alive? Where is the impulse toward being whole, as you're pointing? And while you were speaking, what came to mind was one of EQ's poems. EQ, you probably know this, recognize this, many. He said to his lover, "How many times must I tell you, you can't be anyone else?" And that really sums it up for me. Yeah. So trying to be someone other than we are causes a death of some kind. Mm-hmm. Well, I celebrate with you, Patrick. Thank you for bringing this up.
You're very welcome. Thank you for your insights into that other commentary, of a similar koan. Johnny.
You mentioned the Sandokai, the merging of difference and unity. And there is a line that says, don't make up standards on your own, which to me suggests only a Buddha with a Buddha. This idea about Buddha Dharma or Dharma body being the entire phenomenal world suggests that when a Buddha grasps that, he does so without forming an opinion. And that only a Buddha with a Buddha suggests two parts of that body fully recognizing each other without opinion, which eye to eye, heart to heart, I think is an adequate experience of intimacy. Mm-hmm. Presence without opinion. Mm-hmm. So that occurred to me as you were speaking, which throws us to a kind of mandate that our practice is always with ourselves and what's present, and without opinion.
Thank you for those comments. The idea of don't set up standards on your own, standards like culture. We have to remind ourselves that, we're doing this practice voluntarily, but I think we all know that there's that idea that, we're kind of pushing upstream. This practice isn't so easy. We're a little bit outside of the norm, and standards. I think about my work as a physician. There's so many standards and rules that I totally am lockstep a part of. And how difficult it is, when I see things aren't working, for me to, steer out and do something different. And the risks I take and the questions I have. So certainly, standards of who should couple up, go back, centuries. And It's, you know, this, you know, society twisting so that, you know, churches are now in the parade, and are we going to have gay marriage? You know, that's such an upstream notion that, you know, but you know, that wheel is turning. You know, it's turning in the medical profession. It's turning, you know, and we've seen how gay straight norms have turned, you know, in the last 30 years. We have to remind ourselves that we're all pretty embedded in culture, and that our practice is to, at the very least, take a look at that. Take a look at when we're at how much we're just doing kind of lockstep what our culture has already done, and can we at least take a look, if not change some of the things that don't work so well. So that's a good line that you found. That's about this koan. Thank you. Thank you. Being numberless, I around the Salem, delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them, Dharma.